While everyone's obsessing about the Christmas season, you've got a different season on your mind. One where red noses come from shouting your support in the crisp, cold, pitchside air. Where the roaring fire is in your belly, not your sitting room. And the perfect gift is an unexpected win. Don't miss a moment with a GAA season ticket. A gift for yourself or the fan in your life. Available at gaa.ie/season ticket. Are you in? The GAA, where we all belong.
Off the ball, rugby.
If you look at Mac in a 23, he could play 10 for you. He has played 10 in the past, he's played 15, can play on the wing. Mac's the sort of player that can kind of play anywhere in the centre. He's a footballer.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball, breakfast.
According to the CSO, the name Arthur in 2024 was a baby name 119 times. There were 91 babies named Arthur in 2023 by comparison. So that's an increase of 28. We have a representative of the name with us this morning on the show. It's Arthur O'D. He's from Sligo. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, crucially not born in the last 2 years, but yeah.
But it's the same name.
Same name.
I have here.
Same name. Yeah. Now, yeah. I wonder, is that every derivation of it like?
I looked at this. Took me a good portion of last night up to make sure that this is definitely correct.
But I wonder, like, because I suspect maybe it's just certain, it's common enough with Eastern European families. So maybe it's kind of a bit of a revival.
You had that Barcelona midfielder as well?
Yeah, there is. I think he was a Brazilian. Yeah.
Google, name sports people with the initials DSN. I'm sorry, there are none. But how about DS Dan Sheehan? Yes, I will take that, Google, because the man to my left is a massive rugby fan. He goes one better as well. It's DSN. It's Darren Smith-Nocton. Good morning. Right. How are
you? Good morning, Colin. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for asking. He played 2 times against New Zealand, 2 against Japan, a couple of games against Australia, and had a pair of South African encounters that he won't forget. It's the former soccer goalkeeper and soccer striker. He'd make you question, what have you done in your life? The very own legend of the game. It's Alan Quinlan. He's back as the guest host. Good morning, Quinny.
Good morning to everybody tuning in. 4 in this morning. So
we're packed.
Loads of opinions.
Loads of opinions, yeah. Is right. So, big day, Quinny. Midday, the Republic of Ireland will find out who they're playing in the playoff next March, 26th of March. So we have, what, either Poland, Wales, Slovakia, or Czechia. And then at 2 p.m, both Ireland and South Africa will officially name their teams for the Aviva Stadium encounter. But Quinny, all the papers this morning are going with the probable 15 that Andy Farrell will name, and it looks like Sam Prendergast is going to retain the number 10 jersey.
Yeah, it's I'm surprised Rassie Erasmus didn't name his team early in the week. Sometimes he does, most of the time he does that. They're both out at 2 o'clock. Usually this predicted team by the journalists is one that's, How do they know that? How do you predict it? They get to watch a bit of training. They hear whispers, yep, rumours, players talk. So I'd heard that last night before I saw any online stuff. I heard that that's the direction they're going. I heard last week that it was going to be Jack Crowley that was starting in South Africa, that the players kind of, you know, that's the decision for Australia and this is the decision for South Africa. He played really well, Sam Prendergast, and I think the attack probably looked really good. His kicking game was good, so they've obviously based it around that and said, okay, we're gonna maybe be braver in this call and try and build on the attack scenario rather than worrying about what could happen defensively. We all know what South Africa will try and do. Mm-hmm. And look, it's not something that's completely new that you target an out half and opposition out halves are never usually the strongest defenders. We've seen the trend bucked a few times over the years with Johnny Wilkinson.
Yeah.
You know, even I played against him. You run straight at him thinking it's a different scenario as opposed to some other out halves in that era. Dan Carter, probably the same. Johnny Sexton, probably not at the start of his career, but at the end he was wrapping up big back rows and props and second rows, and loved the tackle up around the chest area, didn't he? He was going after the ball. It wasn't really a tackle technique per se, is trying to chop the legs. So that's the one people will debate and talk about. And look, in some ways, you always try and think, if you in any sport, you have to tailor your game to the opposition in a sense, and you can't completely go, well, we're just going to ignore the personnel and the opposition team in any sport and pick our own team and stick to our own game plan. There has to be some tweaking, particularly when you're playing a powerhouse who are in unbelievably good form. They have a massive kind of feel-good factor about everything they do. So you have to tailor your game a little bit. But in some ways, it's to be commended and could be a masterstroke in the sense of, here's a statement saying we're focusing on attacking South Africa rather than containing South Africa. Sounds very, there's not this massive difference between Jack Crowley and Sam Prendergast when they play, this huge gulf of one is an attacking player and the other is not. Jack Crowley's attack has been good for Ireland. I think maybe the minute detail of speed of delivery, balance, slick hands, stuff like that, decision making has been the point of difference with Sam Prendergast when he's been on song. It's kind of a statement selection in a sense of we're going to attack, we're going to stick to what we did well against Australia and try and build on that. And I'm a little bit surprised, because I thought that, and I said it Monday morning, I thought it would go back to, because again, it sounds kind of crazy for both players. Whoever starts, there's pluses and minuses for both selections. I think they're both still developing, even though Crowley's a few years older. So I think they came off the field against Australia, both would have had a good smile on their face and felt good. And it was good for Jack Crowley to come on, get a couple of kicks and be part of that surge at the end of the game for him. So they're both all about confidence here. But Sam Prendergast again, it's something you're not going to fix in a week. I just don't think he's that aggressive. For Lenny Catala's try, it's a soak tackle and it's a try. So he has got to, in that situation, if he's going backwards, somehow wrap his legs, arms, any sort of his body around Iketau there. And even if he goes over the line, hold him up. He needs a moment like that defensively to kind of... I know he had the hit in James O'Connor, which was something...
The game, yeah. Do you know why he's not physically the biggest at all, Sam Prendergast? He's 6'4", he's quite lean. Is that the defining factor in tackling? Because I presume your technique can override your physicality, can it, to an extent?
A good technique, if you see in even an underage sport, smaller guy against bigger. In rugby, the small guy, if he's technically very good, he can chop down the bigger guys and stuff like that. So I do think he needs to get better technically, and there has to be some little bit of a spark that kind of ignites here, that, it's like poking a quiet fella in a match, that they get a bit angry and suddenly they bring up the aggression levels. I don't know personally, sometimes it's hard to coach desire and a little bit of niggle or nastiness in someone, but who knows. I think he'll know that Damien D'Alenda, the first chance he gets off the back of a lineout it'll be 9 straight to 12 with D'Alenda running down that channel if they can, or the South African loose forwards. But look, it is what it is, and I hope he goes brilliantly well, and I hope he gets, it's like anything, in the first tackle or two in a game, if you get one big one, the crowd will get behind him a little bit, but the players around him have got to protect him as well and make sure that they have give him good support around
Dara,
his defence.
You were a man who called for Prendergast starting between the Japan and Australia game. You predicted it. He retains his place. What are your thoughts?
I did expect, when you were saying, Crowley to start this game. I would have thought the plan was to just give Sam minutes but Crowley.
We could be speculating here because
yeah, look,
it doesn't
it's
happen
not.
Often when this predicted team comes out. Sometimes there's, oh God, that's not the predicted team. There's actually a player or two different there. So
they could get it wrong. They could get it wrong. But
it's high, it's
in
usually,
all likelihood, though, yeah.
It's likely that.
I would say Prendergast will start this game. I think it's very much a thing of this is planned before the window. I would have said they planned it out that, right.
I don't agree with you. I think what happened against Australia the other night, last Saturday, has they're pleasantly surprised. And it's actually good for the coaching staff that he's played well. And as I said, Jack Crowley came on and did really well. So what you want in that situation is two guys who actually have a bit of a smile on their face and that bit of a spring in their step, rather than, geez, I'm being scrutinised. I played before, and sometimes towards the latter part of your career, you're nearly looking at the sideline saying, they're warming up, you're someone that, you know, it's a preordained decision to take someone off. And sometimes that can affect you, like, in a negative way.
Do you think that's what they're doing, though, that they're not married to 110 anymore? They're just like, right, we'll give the lads as equal minutes as we can.
I much prefer that one of them really, or even, one just grabbed hold of it and the other player was actually coming on and doing really well. But look, I was involved for a long time with David Humphreys and Ronan O'Gara, where we didn't know as players who was going to be announced on the Monday evening or the Tuesday to the squad and who was kind of running that fly half role. And the two of them were quite grumpy and sour about the decisions most of the time, but they got on great together, and you want players to be upset when they're not selected. So, but you also want them, and I hope they're building a bond with each other, because they have to go and stay after training, do all kick in, jump in a taxi and back to the hotel, and so if they've got to try and help each other as well.
If that comes out this way, they'll say that's the right team. How does Jack Crowley feel? Not that it's about feelings, I know, but like in terms of like, what could he be doing differently?
I think he'd be frustrated and disappointed because he started the window as, the debate is put to bed. They were some of the headlines even, wasn't it? Like after Leinster Munster.
I actually don't think that's the way they're looking at it anymore.
But I'm saying that was the narrative, the headlines. Yeah. Well, all these journalists and sports writers who were 12 months ago talking about Sam Prendergast going to Australia with the Lions actually were saying, oh no, Jack Crowley now is the debate put to bed. So the debate is obviously not put to bed because you could in some ways starting Jack Crowley for the four games wasn't something that was going to happen. I think Sam Prendergast starting against Japan was something we expected, and then maybe to go back to Crowley, so maybe a 3-1 scenario with Sam Prendergast coming off the bench a few times. But look, we could go on and on about this. I think Jack Crowley would be very disappointed, Arthur, I'm sure, because he started the window with playing really well for Munster.
While everyone's obsessing about the Christmas season, you've got a different season on your mind. One where red noses come from shouting your support in the crisp, cold, pitchside air. Where the roaring fire is in your belly, not your sitting room. And the perfect gift is an unexpected win. Don't miss a moment with a GAA season ticket. A gift for yourself or the fan in your life. Available at gaa.ie/season ticket. Are you in? The GAA, where we all belong.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Let me run through the probable 15 that all the papers are going with here. I'll just read the Irish Times version. It's a replication of the rest. So it's the usual front three that we'd be well used to, the established trio of Porter, Sheehan, and Furlong, so Paddy McCarthy goes out. Then the second row, we have James Ryan and Tadhg Byrne. In the back row is Ryan Baird, Josh van der Veer back in, and Caelan Dorris back to his, I guess, best position at 8, so Jack Conan on the bench. And then I'm on the back, so we have Gibson Park and Prendergast. The centres, Ringrose will be partnered by Bundy Aki, ahead of Robbie Henshaw, who was predicted to be on the bench. And it's the same back three in the win against Australia. So you have Tommy O'Brien, James Lowe, and Mack Hansen. Now, Mack Hansen, not an absolute certainty by the looks of it there.
Yeah, there's been the odd suggestion that Stockdale is looked at as the backup to him going into this game, which is kind of an odd thing. You don't really see that in the papers, that people will be explaining who the backup is should someone be injured ahead of a game. So there's been a suggestion that Mack Hansen may have picked up something during the week. Don't know yet. I, if you haven't said anything about it, so that's yet to be seen. We'll find out at 2 o'clock today.
But 2 o'clock today. So if it's not Hansen,
he hasn't trained fully during the week, particularly at the start of the week. So
yeah,
there's obviously some.
Jacob Stockdale is the name doing the rounds. If Hansen doesn't make it, at fullback.
Slightly surprised by that as well. Welcome note to me, but I would have thought Jimmy O'Brien would have been the first option of fullback, having played there more often. Stockdale, I think, last played there in December 2020 for Ireland, or late 2020 anyway. Played there for Ulster once this season, has played over the last few seasons the odd time, but not his natural position. But it was pretty obvious when he did play there against the Bulls in October that there was very much a mind to having him as an option in this window at fullback. But I don't know, we'll have to wait and see today to see what happens, if Mack Hansen is fit or not. It would be a big blow to lose another fullback, third. This window, really, with Hugo Keane and Jamie Osborne both being unavailable. But look, it would be interesting to see Stockdale back at fullback for Ireland. It's been a long time since we've seen that. What do you think, Quinny? I don't know.
What do I think of... first of all, Mack Hansen, he'd be big loss given his... the footballing ability that he has and the threat that he has with ball in hand. I think Australia were poor last week and they didn't test him or kick accurately enough. James O'Connor has been left out of the Australian squad, hence afterwards. But I just don't know about Jacob Stockdale as a full back. I think he's shown some good form with Ulster in the end of last season, to be honest, and very dangerous player with ball in hand. I think sometimes he frustrates me and has done over the years with, you know, that kind of work rate and that energy that he can bring. But, you know, exceptional player, very, very talented. Jimmy O'Brien, I think, is... I would have thought maybe, he's probably more familiarity with playing at fullback, but...
And having Leinster teammates either side of him as well.
I wouldn't even look too much into that. I think he's a very good player as well, but if you're kind of going down to your third, fourth choice starter at fullback, shows maybe we have some depth in that position. There is some depth there, but
he'd
be called to go for Jacob Stockdale. But look, the other side of Mack Hansen would be a big loss, because I think that bit of a maverick style that does ignite players around you, because he's going to do something different. And usually his decision making is really good, and he's a threat with ball in hand. So look, when you look at what South Africa will name in Colby and Aronson on the wings, the deception there, the ability to evade people is phenomenal, and we won't have the same pace as them. I know Tommy O'Brien probably has exceptional pace and is Ireland's speedster, but Aronson, Colby, such dangerous threats there. And I think South Africa will kick, and they'll test whoever's at fullback as well. So it's
a little bit concerning having so many injuries in that back three as well, because, as you say, the pace and the quality from South Africa in their back three, there is potential there to just completely pick us apart. You see, they do that to teams. My mind goes to 2019, the World Cup final, where Kobe just absolutely tore up England's back three, and that was a very good back three as well. So if we have a very disjointed, and
you need about three people to tackle him, and it's all about numbers, and if he can get someone one-on-one, the step in ability is just sensational, really. He's just phenomenal, but both the wingers are, so you got to try and limit their ball and stay robust and kind of strong defensively and manage the tempo of the game as well. And I think, look, it's a home game for Ireland. It's the reality here is, you know, you have to you have to at least get parity up front and to have a chance against this team. You know, Rassie Erasmus has never won with his Springbok team. Well, they've only played, many times they've played, is it two? Since 2017.
There was a 5 year gap. They've been 17 and 22 is the next one.
2 years ago, yeah. So there's only a couple of games, two games, is it?
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of these South African players were played in that game in 2017, 38-3 to Ireland.
Yeah.
Or 38-5, was it?
38-3, 35
points. So maybe that's the rivalry that maybe it stems back to then. That was a kind of a painful one. We can ask Stephen Kitsoff later on about that rivalry, but that was a strong team on paper in 2017.
Yeah, yeah. Hammered them.
So they've won everywhere, haven't they? They've won in New Zealand, Argentina, you know, Twickenham, all over. He'll want to kind of
come in with a
absolutely
sense of purpose.
Yeah. We want to win in Dublin here and just kind of rubber stamp our authority, really, and deservedly. Well, they've been top of their game
in class,
you know,
yeah,
for a number of years, and that performance in Paris 2 weeks ago, the performance in Wellington against against New Zealand, 43-10 record score. One of the best teams, if not the best team ever, international team squad. Like,
it's hard to argue.
I think, yeah, when you think of any, who's the best squad that we've seen?
2015 All Blacks.
Yeah, 2011, 2015, that era. Yeah.
So if they're one of the best ever, if not the best ever, and if we win on this Saturday,
are we the best ever? Yeah,
we're gone. Like, the head's gone.
The best ever. Yeah, we are the best ever. And then, so the South African fans then will just straight away pull the rug from out under us and say, "Well, you've never won a quarter final."
Yeah, that's
so
all.
That stick is there. It's there. Just grab the stick.
I know. We've just beaten the best team of all time. Like,
no, I think, you know, when you go to, I've probably said it in 2024, that summer tour after the World Cup, you think you're going, you're playing the world champions in South Africa in Pretoria and Durban. At altitude, harder to win there, you would think, than maybe in Cape Town, which Ireland won a test in 16, that first test in 16. To win that second test in Durban was we needed it, in the sense of we're not completely broken here and we're not a million miles away, and that even though it's a friendly, test friendly essentially, which, you know, the non-rugby lovers mention a lot about their only friendlies. They won't be friendlies next year because we have a Nations League. It's going to be league points. But that win in 2024 was, we needed it at the time. And
that was the second of the two-game series.
Yeah. Lost the first one in Pretoria and the second one won the game. Frawley's drop goals at the end. I thought that first half for Ireland that day in Durban was an outstanding performance, and credit to South Africa, they came back and Pollard kept kicking penalties, and they got right back in, took the lead, and then
loads of players
goals.
Injured that day as well.
I think that we could do one of those results on Saturday, and if we did, it'd actually do the confidence of the group a massive favour, in a sense of, well, here is one of the best teams ever. And so look, even if you don't win, I think you've got to go close here. And but South Africa are capable of putting, if they want, now of course they will want to, but if they are in tune, they can blow teams away, and they showed that. That's the reminder. So Ireland be very aware, they won't be underestimating, oh God, this is at home, we'll grind out a result here. They've got to play really well. If Ireland were to get a result, it's a massive confidence booster for a group that are being questioned a lot.
Yeah, because say if it's a close game, South Africa, nudge it. How will we reflect?
There's no shame in that, in a sense of,
how will,
like,
we reflect in November?
Because, but well, there will be kind of a bit of hysteria about, oh well, aging squad and you know, we're,
but
on
the greatest
decline
ever, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's
what
you'd say.
That's a body of work. Like, it's not like every day you have to be the best.
Yeah.
They've lost, like, because there was a numbers we're doing up, like, it was one of the English papers comparing that All Blacks team and the South Africa team.
Yeah,
and like the South Africa team have lost 16, 17 games or something in that run. I think New Zealand won last like 3 in 50. But like, you're not kind of necessarily going, like, it's not open and shut just because of that, you know.
I think they've changed. Rassie Erasmus changed his team so many times.
They're happy enough to lose some games.
Yeah,
they have an aim.
And if you had the sort of depth that they have, you can maybe take a bit of a risk with some of that. And the people often ask, well, why isn't there more changes? And why? And it kind of goes on to the ticket pricing conversation that was had yesterday by Kevin Potts, the CEO. And that issue was addressed. Financial stability is something that is a major priority here, and I think rightly so, in a sense of the structures, the funding of the game, right down to grassroots level. And it can be seen as an easy kind of narrative, but you just look at the way things have panned out in Wales in the last number of years, and that instability and revenue loss, the catastrophic effect and snowballic effect it can have. So the upside of financial stability and the IRFU being in this situation is you know, even during COVID, to be able to keep everything in order and keep the doors open, essentially, in the business. It's a business, but the ticket pricing is something that has kind of
taken a
bit of attention this week.
So the IRFU confirmed a deficit of €4.2 million for the year ending 31st of July 2025, although they are claiming to be in a robust financial position.
A deficit, but it's not a loss. It's not a...
Yes, because they have cash and cash investments of €62.6 million, no debt, and net assets of €81.6 million.
Yeah, so they haven't run at a €4.2 million loss in their in their books. Essentially, the number revenue has been down.
Yeah,
is that correct? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So it's not catastrophic by any means. Yeah,
yeah, and that was
it's down, but it's not bad.
That was to do with the Rugby World Cup 2023 affected it, because those November games weren't in the books. Essentially,
exactly. That's, yeah, yeah.
While everyone's obsessing about the Christmas season, you've got a different season on your mind, one where red noses come from shouting your support in the crisp, cold pitchside air. Where the roaring fire is in your belly, not your sitting room. And the perfect gift is an unexpected win. Don't miss a moment with a GAA season ticket. A gift for yourself or the fan in your life. Available at gaa.ie/season ticket. Are you in? The GAA, where we all belong.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
That do generate.
Now, that conversation itself about those figures might be of limited interest to people. What would be of wider interest would be the ticket pricing, like you touched on there, right? So I don't know, people out there going to South Africa this Saturday at the Aviva Stadium, that game, it'll be €160. For a Category A ticket, but probably more worryingly for the pockets of people is that the Italy game next year in the Six Nations, a Category 4 ticket will cost you €100. These are expensive outings, Quinny.
Very expensive. I grew up in Tipperary, so we would come to Dublin a lot as kids and teenagers. Not as much as adults, so as adults, because I was involved in the game, but a lot of my mates would have. It was a kind of a traditional thing that you'd do at least one of the Six Nations games at home to the old Lansdowne Road, and that would involve train, not a taxi, because you wouldn't afford a taxi from Euston Station. You'd rather have a bottle of cider or something for that price of the taxi, or two or three maybe. Head over on Bagot Street, have a drink or two, go to the match, and a bag of chips afterwards, maybe then, and back to the train and home. Pricey day even back then, but one that you'd kind of prepare for. But if you're a mum or a dad and you're bringing a couple of kids to Dublin in that situation, it's,
it's a lot.
You're talking the price of a week in Spain, maybe, or you're in Portugal in the summer. So look, it's a kind of a catch 22 with the way everything has gone, and but they're very, very expensive. It's hard for people.
They won't go down, and that's the thing. They're never going to decrease the prices from here. If people pay it and are going to go to the game, and it'll probably sell out, the Italy game, it'll be close to a sellout. So why would they ever decrease the prices? It's going to hurt people. But if people continue to go,
won't be decreased. Yeah, I don't know if they can or will. Then maybe they're conscious of this, and maybe the only way this will change is if you have a Six Nations game where there's 35,000 people at a game and there's 15,000 seats available. Which, look, if you look at what happens with Premier League football over in the UK, Cullum, there's people going across there in flights on a Saturday morning and coming back Saturday night, and they're paying, you know, father and son are paying 300-400 quid for a flight, for each flight, 700-800 quid. They're paying 300 quid maybe for a ticket.
That's a lifestyle choice.
They're playing like, yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, because there's so many people willing to do that, it doesn't change the price.
Yeah, that's what
so
I mean,
essentially, if you have a Ryanair flight full and a Saturday morning and Saturday night coming back, and those people are paying, that dad in that situation, because I've done this myself, is paying the guts of 1,500 or 1,600 euro for that one day out to say we've been in Anfield or we've been in Old Trafford or whatever, and the plane is full, and that they're willing to do that for the day. My point here is, you've people, you've obviously a massive corporate section, which, again, going back to the Roy Keane prawn sandwich brigade, it's part and parcel of life now, whether you like it or not. And the corporates will buy tickets, there's season ticket holders. But then there's that situation of people who say, well, I'm doing the one Six Nations game and it is very expensive. So if you've so many of them and those empty seats are filled, well, it's full house, and it's constantly a full house, you know. And I've been to a good few the soccer games in the last 10 years in the Aviva, and they're often empty seats everywhere. They're not sellouts. It's crazy. And people often kind of say that football is the biggest sport in Ireland, in a sense of what we saw. It captures the imagination at the weekend.
This week, yeah.
But rugby, whether you like it or not, it sells out, you know. So it's hard for, if you're selling tickets to a venue, a night out in your pub or your restaurant, and you're charging top dollar, but you're selling out every time. Well, you're not going to drop your price to 50% drop, because you're still going to sell out. The only way this will change is if they don't sell out.
It's a tough one though as well, because the team branding is hashtag team of us doesn't really feel like it, because I know there is that argument, obviously they're not going to drop the prices if the demand
is there.
I'm sure
people will come in the comments here, Dara, from Cork, from Sligo, from your hometown, or from Galway, and you know, even up north, to say, well, it's not feasible for us to go down. It's a 8:10 kickoff for Australia last week. You know, we're not out of the stadium till 10:30, 11:30.
Yeah.
Okay, do we jump back in the car? Is it worth spending all that money that you can't go and have a few pints and have a night out? And then the hotel prices are astronomical. So I don't have the answer to this. It's just the way modern sport has gone. If you go to any sort of sport in the in America, Cullum, have any been to the States?
Yeah, I went to Boston Bruins NHL game.
Right.
Yeah.
How much were the tickets for that?
I can't remember, but it was grand.
It would be different.
That was my memory.
There's loads of them. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's maybe 5 home Ireland games a year at most.
A bunch of games, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, what do you mean, though?
No, I mean some of the sport, the kind of elite stuff. Are the prices astronomical? How does this work in other sports, in other countries? You know,
I think to your point, it's the lack of games, isn't it?
Yeah.
For rugby. I think so. I think they can do it. They can look, if people are paid, they can do it. And look, there's a reaction to this in the comments, and the word grotesque is being used to do with the pricing. And generally the terminology around rugby, to Dara's point there about hashtag team of us, and people are picking up on that in the comments.
Yeah.
But there's also I guess there's an acceptance of the reality of it, because when does an industry or a company or an organization lower the prices if people are already paying the price that they're charging? So this is only going to go one way.
That's the problem. There is a certain number of student tickets available, but then they go out to the clubs, they get snapped up. But a lot of the clubs, you know, they don't use their allocation.
They might
sell them on, and they go to corporate stuff. But again, there's a market there that people are buying up these tickets and they're using it. There's only, like, my point there about the one-off day of being able to go, I'm going to pick one and I can afford it, like the Premier League job. There's a certain number of that, but then there's a certain cohort of people who'll just they can afford that, but there's a lot of people who can't do that day out. And I don't have the answer. If you drop down the tickets, so if the tickets are 100 quid for Italy, if you drop down to 50 quid, does that open the door then? Yeah, I'm sure it does to people from outside of Dublin or outside of kind of the catchment area of Dublin City, to say, you know, I can bring a couple of kids now, three tickets, 150 quid, I'll drive the car in, we'll get the day out. If the student tickets to bring in kids, there's only a very limited number which are behind the goals, you know. So it's, yeah, it's a tough one to kind of, you can, it's very hard to say to the IRFU, well, you know, just drop the prices here. They're not going to, and they probably shouldn't really. If
popularity as well, doesn't it? Yes. It's like, it's not like you're having trouble shifting those tickets. And it's not even, I don't even mean like from the point of putting it up or down, but it's just like, if you make it cheaper, it doesn't necessarily make it more accessible. More people might try and get it, but it doesn't mean you're guaranteed to get it. It's not like there's tickets there to be bought.
No.
Like you were talking about it last year, going, did you go to the France game last year? Was it one of the games last year? But it was through a club. Like, you have no chance of going into the open market to get one for...
Very little, yeah. Italy is always, there's always a few tickets left over, but apart from that, any of the big games.
It's more feasible to get some, you know, even people asking me, can I get them a couple of tickets and stuff, that usually, you know, you have a bit more flexibility there. Like Wales, Scotland is, not as bad. England, France are the two that...
No chance. Yes.
You might as well kind of, you know, asking people...
Go higher.
Because they're just snapped up, and the English market will snap them up as well. They'll pay over the odds for them as well. Yeah. So look, it's a story that's going to rumble on.
Peter's Punts here saying Ireland have outgrown the Aviva. Have you noticed demographics changing in the last 25 years yourself in terms of who's going to these games?
Well, I don't usually sit in, it's kind of rare that I'd be,
I know,
sitting,
but even
the
feed,
crowd,
even you're a cursory glance and then you're in the crowd. You get a sense of it for sure, at least.
It's quite, I find it's quite a young crowd. It's like a trendy thing to be at it.
Mm.
But you do wonder then, how are these people getting tickets? Because, like, you could say we need to ring fence them more, but they are quite ring fenced, and that people that play for clubs are getting them, but they're obviously being sold on. So it's kind of a thing, it's hard to regulate, but. My frustration with it is that Leinster will play in the Aviva and they'll get like maybe 10,000 at it, maybe, and the atmosphere is terrible and they don't even open.
That's
up
for
the
URC game. If it's the European game now in November, they can get the 35, 40, 50,000 depending. The reality for rugby fans outside of Dublin, or even there's people in Dublin who wouldn't afford to, you know, spend that, you know, 300 or 400, bring a few kids to a game and on the weekend. It's, you know, it's mad. But I think players' salaries have gone up, you know, the market has kind of increased and changed from my time playing, definitely. And so if you take 20 quid off the tickets at 160 quid for the weekend, is there a big difference in 140, 160, Arthur? What do you think?
I don't know. Like, it doesn't... I still think it's not. It's the same, probably, people buying them.
You're just in a level now that's...
just like it's...
It's, it can fluctuate up a little bit. I'm sure if... maybe they will decrease them by that 10, 15.
It's like the GA. It's like the All-Ireland final tickets going up. It's like, you're never... Like, final teams notwithstanding or whatever, like, depending on... But more often than not, you're never failing to sell them off.
But what's the price of a ticket for All Ireland?
It's about 100 now. 100 more, well. Yeah, it's gone up to 100. But it used to be, definitely was 90, I think, until relatively recently. So it's gone up a tenner.
Yeah. I paid shy of €200 to watch Cork lose twice.
It could be 300. It could be.
Yeah, I think I don't know what people's attitude towards money is these days. I don't know if the tap culture makes it just make more fake, because I'll just tap it, whatever, it makes the noise in the phone, I don't even look at it, don't even look at the price. People are just paying stuff for an experience. There's no cash being exchanged.
If you're folding out the money, it's different.
It's different.
What, in the comments, can anyone tell us a solution, or do the IRFU, because did it just cut the tickets back, and should a ticket be, what price should a ticket for South Africa be at the weekend? Should it be €80? Like, €80 is still a nice price for a ticket, isn't it? 80, 100
Well, it's
euro.
Like anything under €100 these days, like, is grand for anything.
Yeah.
Even for gigs and stuff.
Pints and coffee aside, like, that's about it.
But I think you're right. I think the thing you touched on, like, even last week, set of tickets were extremely competitively priced for Australia. There's only so far you could come from, like, if you're going, so from Sligo, from my perspective. So if you're realistically going to have to go for a hotel,
unless you want to drive down that night. I'm sure it makes no difference if the ticket's 30, 40 euro cheaper. The hotel's going to rinse you out anyway.
Mm. Yeah,
it's going to cost you hundreds. Cause
the thing, I think for the half five kickoff or the half two kickoff on the Saturdays for Six Nations, it's more feasible for a couple of lads from Cork to come up and get the bus up or get the train up and say, you know what, the 120, 30, 40. Yeah,
you make it.
It is what it is. We're going to have the pints. We're going to drop 300 or 400 here minimum. And they do that. And people still do that. My brother does it. His mates. So that happens. But I think it does help the likes of that person who wants to get to the international that they can jump on a train or a bus to get home. You know what I mean? The bus is about 20 quid up from Cork for the day to do that scenario.
Yeah.
And, you know, the journey home is easy because they're like that in the seas. They're fast asleep after a few pints.
Cozy.
I think it's in their best interest to make that happen, though, to get people from different places, because I don't think there's no doubt that the atmosphere would be better with lads coming down from Belfast or from Cork or from Galway or wherever. Like, because at the minute, people are mentioning in the comments, like, it's a social event, really. You hear people talking about where are we going next.
And you're focusing on ticket prices here. Like, the absolute rip-off of hotel prices and the price gouging that's gone on there is another part, a big part of that story as well, because...
But it happens because people pay it. Like,
this is it.
It's Oasis, it's everything. It's like people complain, but then they silently pay.
Yeah, yeah.
People don't like the government and they vote for him. You know, this happens all the time. Like, this is people, like, they say one thing out here and then they do something else out there.
Like that cognitive dissonance. You just have to exist in two different worlds.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I think before you move on from the Franco Mostert red card.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I think that's...
Agreed.
There's a bit of... definitely South Africa was speaking this week and they've... last week and this week... and even go back to the Jan Henrik Wessels thing with... against Connacht, the groin area Josh grabbing Murphy. And Josh Murphy and that situation, I think they feel like they're getting a bit of a kick in the last few weeks in those situations. I think the Jan Henrik Wessels one, again, I was very surprised that you can suspend someone for 9 weeks when you've no camera evidence. It's based on testimony. Going right back to that game with the Bulls, there was some sort of a grab or something like that, and he got 9 weeks. Then you've Lou Diager sending off against France, and then Mostert gets a permanent red, Franco Mostert, against Italy last week. I genuinely thought Franco Mostert's tackle was 100% player, bent at the hips, trying to make a legitimate tackle, contact here, arm comes up a little bit. Really poor decision. I think it was to go straight red there. And I've probably been saying it, we haven't seen straight reds until this window.
No, I was only asking a few weeks ago, what does it take to get a straight red?
These are the first kind of straight reds that have happened.
Yeah.
And that
what was it? Was it a yellow for you?
Maximum a yellow.
Oh, okay.
And even a penalty and saying, well, like, I'd say yellow because you don't get a clear wrap, but the contact is here and it's the impact that comes up. It looks worse. I think in that situation, the referees that's one that goes, send that away for to be assessed. And if it's upgraded to 20 men in red, then, well, that's fine. The bunker has found different angles or they've a chance to breed. But the whole reason was to send it to the bunker so that you kind of get it right. But I think it was a very poor decision and an unfair one on Franco Mostert. He's clear to play this weekend, to be involved with the Springboks. The reason I'm talking about that, we have one in the Japan-Wales game again. Harry Hawkins got the 20-minute red card. Again, it's a chest contact, wrong decision, rescinded as well. So we now have a couple of incidents in the last number of weeks. We have the Tyburn one, the Harry Hawkins one, and the Franco Mostert one that have been rescinded. I understand that these things they're difficult. And the reason we've had the bunker in rugby is to give that bit of a chance to assess it more. But in the last 2 weeks, we've seen two straight reds. The Lou Diager one, I don't know what you think, Dara. I think...
It was weird.
It could have been. Yeah. I think it was 20-minute red card anyway. To go up to the permanent red was...
Rameau didn't guess HIA.
Yeah.
He never went off.
For it, right?
Yeah.
But it looked vicious. It looked like... I was like, that's a red card. You know, he took his head off.
Yeah, he's down on his knees. They found... To go to permanent red, you have to find no mitigation. There was some mitigation to Ramos one. I think it was a 20-minute red card, that one. I understand it's gone up to the permanent red. Not so much an issue with that, but the Mostert one, how to get that wrong, and the Harry Hawkins one. Mm. What has to happen here, I think one little tweak they have to have in this is try and be quicker about it, number one, but also give the TMO bunker the option of giving the permanent red.
Yeah, I wonder if there was a bit of pressure. So, there was a lot of criticism on referees of relying on that too much, of just giving the yellow and then waiting to see what the bunker did. Maybe there was a bit of pressure on referees to, you know, give that straight red. And
look, there's not a conspiracy here against South Africa. I think some of their fans would like to think maybe at times that they're being punished because
that was my next question for you. Actually,
I don't think that is the case. So let's talk in you know, reality here. But I do think the Vessels one and the Jaeger Monster, the three there, that maybe you start to think, God, there is a bit of this isn't in going according to plan. World Rugby headquarters is here in Dublin, so that's why Tadhg Bourne got off. But look, the Tadhg Bourne one was, you go back to it again. So I'm glad Franco Mostert, because the bigger picture here is these decisions have to be right. So in simple terms, you go penalty, yellow card that the referee can give if it's cynical play, yellow card for the review if he thinks that, you know, there was head contact, 20-minute red card that the bunker can give, but the only person who can give a permanent red is the on-field referee. So I think we need to give that power to the bunker as well now, that they can decide, look, I think that there's huge force in this, that it was cynical, that there's no mitigation, and that he can tell the referee, look, this is the red card is going to stay, a 20-minute red card.
Okay, so 2 o'clock this afternoon, Ireland and South Africa will name their teams. And midday today, the Republic of Ireland will find out who they play in the World Cup qualifier on the 26th of March next year. It will be either Czechia, Poland, Slovakia or Wales.
Who do you want?
I would take Wales.
All right.
It's away, no matter what. I'd love that Wales game. I would love it.
Yeah, I saw someone put up... couple of flights last night. It was about 50 quid.
It's only over the road.
It won't be. If
three and a half thousand they gave us in Cardiff that night a few years ago. So that could be the biggest allocation that we'll get as well out of the four sides. So that's another thing to note.
160 to go. To
I don't know.
Match.
We could pool it in, like pool it in together, the four of us, for one ticket. Zara Antia, just before we move on, like, so we'll talk with Kieran Cunningham about this later, but like, what an impact Quinny had in Irish boxing. It's amazing. From Georgia, came over without a word of English, but he took his first training session and they all realised this guy is a genius in terms of how he coaches. He presided over 10 Olympic medals and 154 medals in total at elite level, stepping away after 23 years.
Yeah, and the great thing for his legacy is you hear a lot of the boxers over the years talking about the impact he's had on them. And that's the nice thing as a coach, if you're involved, that people can speak fondly of you. In any sport, you don't have every player doesn't love the every single player in the group doesn't love every coach, you know. But I think he seems to have a great affinity with these boxers. The success that he's been involved in was at 154 medals, competition medals. For such a small country, and then obviously the Olympic medals are incredible highs. I think it's kind of blindsided people a little bit. Maybe they've known behind the scenes for a while that he was going to step down, but like anything, it can be relentless, it can be fatiguing, it can be, you can get to a point where he said, is he 6 or 8 grandchildren that he wants to spend more time with them. But yeah, he leaves with a brilliant legacy, I think, and he's highly thought of and respected in the game. And it's some story to come with no English here and 22 or 3 years later, you know, this is his home now, this is where he lives, and this is where he's going to stay. And
sea swimming and Bray, that's one of his hobbies. Chess is another, so the technical aspect of him is there for all to see.
He's had a brilliant impact in Irish boxing, amateur boxing.
Before we move on, I always felt watching fights or whatever fighter it may be in the amateurs or the Olympics or whatever it was, you always felt a bit reassured when you saw him in the corner. Like, you always felt a bit of confidence in that fighter.
It's good. I like that. Yeah, it's just good point.
A constant figure.
Paternal as well. There was something paternal and professional about him.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MACK25.